Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Not a good night for Tampa Bay sports teams, man. I got my two screens on that I can see from my kitchen, unlike Tom Jones. Actually, I have three, but I had two going. And so the Rays are winning 1-0. The Lightning, I think at the time when I clicked it on, might have been tied 1-1.
Mm-hmm.
And Zach Eflin was dealing on one. And then the Lightning tied it up. I think at some point it was 2-2. And then all of a sudden they both lost and lost it at the same time. And I was like, wow, glad I wasn't at either one of those games if I was a patron. We'll get to those. Believe me, we will. And I got some thoughts about the Rays bullpen, which isn't good, by the way. Just isn't good.
The strength of the team there, Rick.
Whew, man. Just missed it just by a little bit, okay? Like a little bit there, strength of the team. And we all swallowed that. Certainly hasn't been that way to start the season. But I wanted to start with a guy that me and you have talked about for years, going way back to the Rick and Tom show and all that stuff. And, of course, if you follow baseball, we talk about announcers all the time, you mm-hmm. know, and we did the other day on Vern Lindquist, which was fun discussion. John Sterling from the New York Yankees, the longtime play-by-play guy with all the nicknames.
Since 1989.
It's incredible how long he's been at it. I had no idea. The guy's like 84 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
84, 85, something like that. Is finally hanging up the golden microphone, and you know they offered him a chance to do some, you know, some games, not every game, that sort of thing. It was funny. I was listening to a phone call he made to, I think, WFAN, or they called him or whatever. It might have been, it may not be an FAN. Is Tiki on FAN?
Sure it was FAN. That's their flagship. So
yeah, it was Tiki. It was the Yankees flagship, obviously. And they called him. First of all, we've always had this sort of, I don't know, whimsical relationship with John. Because back in the day, you know, whenever a team would come to town, say, to play the Rays, like the Angels or the Yankees or whoever, John Mamola, somebody would try to get someone from that team.
Behind enemy lines.
Behind, do we have a segment that was actually called that?
In football more than anything. Baseball, you may not have called it that, but that was always the.
Yeah, I get called all the time when we're playing a team in Detroit or somebody will call me and want to know about what's up with the team we're playing this week. So anyway, very often it's the broadcasters that you'll hit up, you know, or a beat reporter or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So one time we attempted to get John Sterling. And they were staying at the Vinoy. I mean, picture this, right? Like you're in Tampa, you're in St. Petersburg, you're staying at this beautiful 5 or 6 star hotel on the water, and you know we're a morning show. We're a morning show. I get it. But they'd come in like the day before or something like that, and had a game that night, and so the message came back that it was a, and you just picture John in his robe, and he just said, "Why would I get up at 6:30 in the morning to talk to a bunch of guys in Tampa?" You know, and we were like, "Well, sorry." And so instead, it was great because we got Susan Waldman, who was phenomenal. She couldn't have been more chipper. "Oh my God, we got John Madden or Joe Madden is in the box. Roger Clemens." And she loved Joe Madden, by the way. I mean, loved mm-hmm. was probably not too strong of a term. She yes. loved Joe Madden. And who didn't, right? Because he gave everybody the time of day and then some. But that was sort of our beginning of our relationship, if there was one, with John Sterling. Of course, he's the one with all the call. "That is high. That is far. You know, here comes the judge. All rise." You know, that kind of thing. "And it's an A-bomb from A-Rod." And I always thought that he sounded like Snagglepuss, like he stole the cadence and the call from the cartoon character. You got to go way back. Go ahead, look it up. Snagglepuss, mm-hmm. who used to go, heaven to Murgatroy, exit stage left, you know, and that sort of thing. And they sounded the same to me. So John Sterling, the longtime Yankee broadcaster, has decided. And the weird thing is when he was talking to Tiki Barber and those guys about it, he goes, you know, I was off because the Yankees didn't make the playoffs. Well, yeah, we all know. It was in all the big papers. It's kind of like a story when they don't.
Shots fired.
Yeah, right? Like, well, I had to be home in October where I'm used to working until November with Derek Jeter. And so he was like, and so I was home in October at my big house. He mentioned that his house is very big, which is neither here nor there, but he was proud of it. In something, New Jersey, I guess. And I was home in October and November, and then it is December and January and February. All the way to March. It's like, what are we reading a calendar now, John? All the way to March. And then I went to spring training. And really, it was on me because I was perfectly happy sitting at home doing whatever I wanted to do.
In my big house.
In my big house. Did I mention my house is big?
It was everything you thought of. And I thought,
well, geez, man, if you're 80-something years old, they offered you kind of a mm-hmm. exit ramp. Why didn't you just take it? Now, all of a sudden, it's a big story.
And he said many times, but he's like, you know, it's the travel that gets to me. The games are easy.
Right. It's the travel. Oh, okay. Like, you're not on the team charter and eating in first class everywhere?
Well, I mean, it's
hard.
The travel, it's the late nights. It's flying out after the games. And,
right. It's the 2 a.m.s. Yeah. It's the whole, you know, day game after a night game. Look, baseball, let me tell you, did it for a month, okay? And no one loves baseball more than me and you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a young man's deal, especially if you're a beat writer. Like Mark Tompkin he's a guy that I literally marvel at his stamina. I do. And Mark's a big dude, and I don't know how he does what he's done for as long as he's done it. It's such a grind. And unlike players, or maybe even
I was going to say, it's a grind for the players and the broadcasters because late nights and
– Yeah.
But the beat writers are like, okay, the game ended. We're writing till midnight. I'll go to sleep. And I'm on a 6 a.m. flight the next morning to get to the
and
next
you're
city.
You're a commercial.
Because there's a game that next night that I got to fly a couple hours to. Yeah, like,
right.
Like the beat writer one, that's brutal.
It's brutal, yeah, because you're not getting the charter flights and all that stuff. And so you're having to make all your own reservations and things like that. A little easier. But, I mean, come on, 80-something years old, man. Like, I don't know if there's anything apparently there's nothing he wanted to do in his big house for all those years. But now I'm going to sit home, and I'm retired. And
what age was Vin Scully when he retired? I mean, he was
in his 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, listen, I don't put John in that category of Vin Scully, but I suppose in New York and parts like that, for as long as he's done the Yankees.
I don't know if you put anybody in Vin Scully's category, but
true.
I mean, John is legendary. He's everything you want of a local broadcaster.
Yeah. Complete homer.
A homer, but he tells it like it is, tells what the fans are feeling.
He will get on them a little bit.
Oh, yeah. That's right. He describes what the fans are feeling. Like,
yeah.
You know, whether it's John Sterling or Jack Edwards in Boston and hockey, Dave Mishkin is a perfect
Dave
example.
Dave does,
that
yeah. They'll get disgusted when things are disgusting.
Yeah. And, you know, he's not afraid to, and he and Phil will tell you exactly, you know, what the kind of the fans are thinking.
Well, Phil doesn't even have to talk. You just hear the groans. Ah, oh, Jesus.
But that's what you want out of a local broadcast. It shouldn't.
Sure.
Everybody from out of town shouldn't enjoy it or shouldn't think it's the greatest thing
you
ever.
You should probably dislike the guy, to be honest with
you. Yeah. It should fit in with whatever the local community is, and every community is different and every fan base is different.
Yeah.
But it should represent that fan base and be able to describe the story mm-hmm. and the game in the way that the fans are feeling it.
Yeah.
You know, and in this market, we've always been lucky because more and more teams are very controlling of their broadcast. Because most of back in the day, radio and TV stations owned all the broadcasts.
And the team just kind of approved them. Like, they would hear these little disclaimers.
They worked with them. And
so-and-so is approved by the Rays.
Yes. Now, most of these broadcasts, not all, but most are owned by the teams.
Mm-hmm.
And the announcers are employed by the teams.
Right.
Some teams are very much, you can't say anything bad. And we've been lucky in this town that all three teams, Bucks, Rays, and Lightning, have given their announcers a lot of freedom. You know, they can criticize the team. You know, and as a listener myself, and granted, I know all these guys, but as a listener, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Like, if the team's playing poorly, you know, they're not necessarily going to say this is the worst effort they've ever seen.
Yeah, and it doesn't get personal. But, it's never personal, but they do reflect the disappointment and sort of what they're watching. You know,
they're not playing well. They're not pitching well right now. They're not hitting well right now. They're not, you know, the offense isn't executing very well right now. Whatever it is, you know, I mean, we're lucky in this town that, you know, I mean, what did we see last year in Baltimore? There was an announcer. I think he did the pre and post game show for Baltimore. And he pointed out that Baltimore was like 0-15 in a Tropicana Field or something.
Yeah, it was just suspended. It was a statement of fact, and he got suspended by and, I was like, wait.
And the whole point of it was like, it used to be a house horse. They're actually doing well now in Tampa. Like,
yeah,
you know,
he was trying to show that they had turned it around. Yeah.
It was actually kind of a compliment. Like,
too negative.
Know, but you know, owners or executives will get, you know, that nitpicky on stuff, and it makes for a bad broadcast when, you know, there's no, you can't describe reality.
Yeah.
And John Sterling was very New York. Like, would his style work in LA?
No. You know, well, maybe, I don't know. No. If he had started there, perhaps.
Well, sure. I, you know, he worked in Atlanta.
Vince Scully
worked
started
in
Brooklyn.
But I mean, John was from New York. He's, you know, I mean, yeah. You know, that's where he always wanted to be. I mean, like, he worked for the Braves. He worked for other teams along his career before he got to New York.
Yeah.
You know, but that's, you know, Jack Edwards in Boston is one I always think of. Or, but I mean, you name it, you know.
Well,
baseball announcers are probably the most known. It's Ernie Harwell in Detroit, or Harry Carey in Chicago, or St. Louis. Skip Carey in Atlanta.
Jack Buck in St. Louis.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Marty Brenneman in Cincinnati. You know. Tom Hamilton in Cleveland. I mean, there's, you know.
Yeah. Andy Freed in Tampa.
Yeah. Andy and Dave for, you know, they were together 18 years. They were the longest tenured duo, I believe, in the American League.
It's cool because in baseball, it becomes a soundtrack of your summer, spring and summer. Mm-hmm. It's really, you do become accustomed to listening to them. And,
well, because it's every day.
Yeah. Right.
You know, or 6 days, 5 to 6 days a week for 6 months. You know, and it's the perfect pace sport for radio too.
Yes, because generally in radio you're mostly listening in your car or
but you have alone. Time to paint the picture. And
very often alone, you're not in a hurry. Yeah, right. You have time. Yeah.
Although now it's a little quicker than it used to be, but
well,
which is good.
Cuz the pitch clock. It's good. That's really been a factor. I don't know how those guys squeeze in anything they're going to say in 18 seconds or whatever.
But you know what? It's actually shown which announcers are really good with economies of words and descriptions and which ones struggle with it.
Yeah.
If you listen to broadcasts, and occasionally I'll flip through the MLB app and listen to other broadcasts when I'm, you know, driving around or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's some that struggle with that pitch clock. Because they were just talking to fill time, but not really
saying much. Yeah,
saying much, and now they got to get it so quick, and it's like it challenges them.
Yeah,
you know, we talked about Vern Lundquist and Vince Scully was the master at it, and there's many others, but it's that economy of words. Like, what's the least amount of words I can use to tell you this story and paint the perfect picture in your mind?
Right,
and then I get out of the way or you know, move on to the next thing, and you know. Yeah. Not just, you know, I got 30 seconds between pitches. I'm just talking to talk. And
now, in radio, unlike TV, you do have to do a little more descriptive stuff.
Absolutely.
Because you are painting the picture. There's no video to accompany it. So you're trying to tell the people, you know, sometimes, not always, but when he's in the wind, when he's in the pitch.
Absolutely.
What the pitch was, where it was, you know, stuff that's happening in the infield and the outfield. So you do have to kind of paint the picture more than you do on TV, but yeah, it is that economy of words that makes those guys great. The other thing, and we've talked about this, and I don't know because I'm not John's eye doctor, but I mean, one of the first things I would think would go if you're a broadcaster is your eyesight. If you're doing play by play, especially with Sterling, and there used to be some famous calls with him, especially of late, where it'd be like, you know, he has this every ball that's hit deep. he'll always start with the standard, it is high, it is far, it is gone. You know, and he would do that, and sometimes it would be like caught by the center fielder, like way short of the warning track, you know, where he's going into his home run call. It's like, no, wait, he caught that. Yeah, it's shortstop.
That is the dirty little secret of announcing, and yeah. I've worked with lots of announcers.
Mm-hmm.
They lose their eyesight.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Not that they can't see, but to see 100 yards down the field in football,
it's difficult.
Or to the outfield, yeah. Like they start making calls like it's gone and it's you know, the outfielder's running in.
And you really can't, you can't watch the monitor for something like that.
No.
You know what I mean? Because you'd have no depth perception if you're just looking at the monitor.
And it's you see it in football. I mean, I don't know Vern Lundquist, but in watching him call football games the last couple of years with SEC when he was, you could tell he was having trouble seeing. Someone who's worked with announcers enough and the way he was trying to hide it and some of the mistakes he would make, you could tell I couldn't tell if that was 13 or 18 on the field. Couldn't tell, you know, I couldn't distinguish between the numbers or the, you know, and that's part of aging. I mean, we talk about it with football players or baseball players and eventually, you know, Father Time catches up to you. Well, your eyesight's the same way.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the shame of, you know, some of those great announcers is that they slip a little bit because they can't see, not because they can't describe the game and tell the stories and,
oh yeah,
and stay relevant. It's some of them struggle. You can tell they struggle with their, you know, like I said, it's not they're blind, but
yeah,
you know, all of a sudden I can't tell the difference between those numbers or
yeah, it's undefeated. Age gets all of us, and it's remarkable that someone like him, Ben Scully, worked until their 80s, and Ben did it on his own many times. You know,
Was by himself for most of it.
Himself, yeah.
And, you couldn't put a partner with him.
Because he was too good of a storyteller. He was too powerful of a voice, and that's what made him so great. You know, and he never missed a pitch. I mean, you know, he would just be going. You know,
well, he did the call on TV, but they would simulcast a few innings on radio.
Yeah,
because he's so big and good.
Yeah, I mean, he was fantastic. I remember. Who was Bumgarner? What was his? Was it Steve? It wasn't Steve Bumgarner. Remember the guy that pitched for the Giants? Madison Bumgarner. Okay. So one day, Benny's, and believe me, we're going to get to the Tampa sports here in just a minute. If you guys don't like the announcer talk, that's fine. I don't care. We love it. But Madison Bumgarner was on the mound. And so I'm listening to Ben tell this story. They even rebroadcast it because it was just so smooth. Of course, he had these wonderful tones of his voice. And he's calling the game, and he's by himself as always. And they're playing the Dodgers. And Madison Bumgarner, so his wife likes to garden. So one day, they're out in the garden, and they see this snake. There's a ball, 1-0. And this snake is in the garden, and he pulls it out, and he starts hacking away at it. There's a strike. It's 1-1. And they chop the snake up, and there's a rabbit inside. There's a pitch in the dirt. It's 2-1. And wouldn't you know it, the rabbit was alive. Like he told this story. Like, and never missed a pitch.
Doesn't miss a pitch.
It was just phenomenal, right?
And every Vin Scully story ended when the inning ended.
Yeah. How did he do it? How did he know?
He was amazing with that.
Yeah. He was so good and such a great storyteller. And I marvel. He was not. Why would I? So now I sent Tom Jones a message tonight or today. And I sent the news in a little clip, and he goes, so what's his excuse now? I don't know. We'll have to call him. We'll have to see. Why would I come out of retirement to talk to you? But maybe he will. He won't be able to tell us that he has a game.
Well, I bet he wouldn't get up at 6:30 to do it.
Still. Probably not. I would get up at 6:30 to do it. I'm not sure he would. But
you're already up at 6:30.
Well, that's true. Sometimes I'm still up at 6:30. Yeah. The question is when we ever go down. But that's another story. All right. So let's get into some of the stuff that happened on Monday. We'll start with the Bucks because you already know that the Lightning and the Rays lost, and we'll get to those guys. So April 15th is not just tax day, although that's painful enough. It's the first day, or was the first day, for the Buccaneers and teams that didn't have new head coaches. First day of the offseason workout program, phase one, which phase one is all classroom, you know, for the most part. You can work with trainers and do some weightlifting and things like this, conditioning stuff. Stuff of that nature. And don't ask me how many days it goes. It's not that many days, maybe a week or so. But phase one, voluntary, which, yeah, right, voluntary, like I volunteered to do my job this year, voluntary workout program. And I assume they had good attendance. I saw the Bucks had, you know, posted a video of their two new dads coming in, Wirfs and Baker Mayfield. And there were others there. So we got a chance to talk to three players on Monday. And in order, it was Rashad White, Zion McCallum, and help me out. Kalijah Kansey, their number one pick.
And Rashad White was at the Lightning game.
Yeah.
On Monday.
Well, I'm pretty sure Rashad asked if he could talk to us. I'm not really sure. He does a lot of interviews. He's everywhere. Very affable guy, likes to be in the public eye, I think. I think he embraces that part of it. And he was good, too. You know, like, look, he's keenly aware, Rashad is, and we'll get into him more this week, but he's keenly aware that while he had a good season, you know, 1,500 total yards is nothing to sneeze at in the NFL. Sadly, and I blame the coaching staff for this, you can't finish the season with 990 yards, right? Like somewhere you have to find this guy 10 yards to go over 1,000. Because I believe the last guy that had 1,000 yards rushing, it wasn't Ronald Jones. He fell shy of it too because he got COVID.
Was it Doug Martin?
It was Doug Martin.
I mean,
The muscle hamster. It's been a minute, right? And so here you had a chance to get the kid 1,000 yards. Now, he did play better. But not until kind of around their turnaround. I remember, I think the first game that I remember Rashad starting to turn a corner a little bit was at Buffalo. They lost that game. Score was relatively close. The game wasn't, I didn't think. And the one thing they started to do was throw him the ball in space. And, you know, it's the old adage that if you, you know, teams will not cover 100% of what you don't throw, right? If you don't check the ball down, they won't cover it. They don't feel you need to. And so they'll concentrate on your outside receivers, your slot receiver, your tight end. They will give you that until you prove you can do it. Well, they started proving they could do it. And Rashad, I think he ended up either first or close to first in terms of, and they have all these next gen stats, making the first guy miss. Like he's hard to bring down in the open field. You get him in space. He's got power and speed. And so the first guy rarely got him on the ground. And I think that, you know, just making positive plays in a different way sort of helped them. And then when I talked to Skip Pete about that same time before that game, you know, Rashad was always trying to hit the home run. They had a new zone blocking scheme, and, you know, he wanted the big play all the time. And instead of pressing the hole, would kind of wait for it, didn't trust it. And so what Skip told him was, look, you're a big back. I mean, he's 6 foot, damn near 6 foot one, 200. And I think he told us he was 221 pounds. That's a big back by anybody's measure these days. He's a big man. And, you know, he told him, you got to run violent. Like, you know, if nothing else, you're a guy that should be able to, you know, lean forward and get those 3-4 yards. And I think what they did also is they moved Baker a little closer to the line of scrimmage. So the timing on the run was a little different. Baker could get the ball to Rashad a little quicker, and those holes would open up and he'd be through there. But it got better as the year went on. And yet you can't deny that for the second straight year, they were last in rushing average. And in this league, you don't want to be last in anything, but you especially don't want to be last in running the football. You know, you have to be able to run it when you want to and run it successfully. And so I think the next step for Rashad, and he said it, he's keenly aware of it, is he's got to be more productive overall. He's got to be more efficient. Efficient is a word you'll hear for for a running back that's averaging in, like he is. His career average is 3.7 a carry. That's just not very special, right? Most running backs, most any running back in the NFL can get you 3 yards. And so he needs to get that up well above four. He knows it. And I think that Liam Cohen, coming from Kentucky where they did run the ball an awful lot. Now, Liam, which, and this will be something to watch because Liam is not a two tight end guy. And very often when you have that extra tight end, that's that extra blocker for you. And you feel good about the numbers right up front. He goes more with one tight end, one back, and three receivers. So that's going to be something to watch. But sometimes when you spread it out, it's not bad either. Maybe you face less eight-man fronts because when you do line up heavy like that, that's when they, you know, they bring the safety down and it's harder to run. So I think, you know, Rashad, who was at the Lightning game, right? Was he doing the, he was pulling the bolt thing tonight?
He did the Tesla coils to start the game, yep.
Got a big applause, by the way, for Rashad. Popular guy.
He's RB1.
He's RB1 because RB2 is Chase Edmonds. And so I think this is another – he was asked about this. What could he say? But I think – in fact, I'm pretty sure the Bucs are going to draft a running back. Now, do I know where? No, I don't. My guess is somewhere on in the second day, right? Second or – I mean – rounds 2 to 4, I would say, somewhere in there. Because, again, Liam has just come from the SEC, which has a, you know, an abundance of running backs, and including one that he had at Kentucky. So I think he's familiar with what would complement Rashad.
Well, you really need two.
You have three.
You really need two, three backs, really.
Maybe three, yeah, yeah, yeah.
In today's NFL and the way it is, and you want backs that, that kind of complement each other, but...
yeah. Such a long season that you – and Rashad, to be honest with you, when he started playing better is when Edmonds was able to get back on the field and be healthy. Edmonds was good down the stretch. He averaged close to 5 yards a carry the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks. But just giving him that one series off, you know, or keeping him fresh for the fourth quarter, that's what you want to do with your running back is have a guy that's got fresh legs in the fourth quarter. If you have the lead, he can really pound the defense. And so it would not surprise me if, in fact, I think I would rather be surprised if they didn't get a running back out of this draft.
Oh, I expect absolutely they will. I mean, you know, whether it's second, third round, or even, you know, you wait till the fifth or sixth even.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they're going to take a running back. I mean, that's a position. That's another position almost every year you should probably be taking someone.
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, few guys, if any, make it to a second contract. By the time you draft a running back at, 23, 24 years old, and he plays 4 years for you, he's closer to 30, and we know, you know, history tells us that that's sort of the line of demarcation for running backs. So how many of them get to that second contract? I think there's almost a sort of an acceptance that we're going to recycle these guys every 4 years or so and just use them up and try to find somebody else. There's a few, you know, that have made it to second contracts and gotten big contracts, the Saquon Barkley's and Derrick Henry's and such, but it's not that many. And so, you know, yeah, having new guys circulate through that position is always very key. We also had a chance to talk to Kalijah Kancey. I would just refer you to TampaBay.com, Tampa Bay Times on this story. It's interesting because I don't know that, you know, Kancey, the Bucs, every team has an ability to have what they call a top 30 visit. And these are with guys that aren't from Florida schools. It just, you know, you get 30 players that you can bring into your facility. You can wine and dine them. Mostly it's to gain some medical information about them and to also have many people in the building meet them to try to figure out what kind of dude they are. You know what I mean? They do a lot of different things with the guys once they're here. But certainly the front office is involved. Sometimes scouts are involved. Sometimes, you know, always the coaching staff is involved. But in the case of Kalijah, and this happens too, it sounds preposterous, but I mean, Kancey was an All-American. I mean, he was first-team All-American. This guy, you know, as an inside defensive tackle out of Pitt, you know, reminded people physically and sometimes on the field of Aaron Donald, because he went to the same school, about the same size. And so here he is projected, at least by most, to be a first round pick. And in fact, he was the Bucs pick at number 19. But, you know, he literally did not receive a single top 30 visit. And at one point he was asking his agents, like, hey man, am I really going to go in the first round? Like, what are you hearing? He was a little nervous about this. And that's sort of the fun a little bit of being a draft pick is being able to be, you know, flown to these places and visit with teams and, you know, have the red carpet rolled out for you. It's exhausting because the whole time you're training for the combine or you're training for your pro day. And he mentioned that, you know, that he's glad this offseason he doesn't have to put his body through that, because it's really, you know, a lot of it is kind of smoke and mirrors. I mean, do we need a defensive lineman to run 40 yards? But if you're going to run the 40-yard dash, that's a whole different technique, right? You got to learn to kind of come out of blocks and be a sprinter and stuff like that. So you spend a lot of time not playing football. And this year, you know, Kalizer can just concentrate on what he needs to get better. But Kancey, you know, the worst thing that happened to him was the calf injury. Like, I think it was like the second day of training camp. He made it back for the season opener at Minnesota. He played very few snaps, aggravated that calf, and then missed a month, you know. And so his preseason was kind of the middle of the season for the Bucs. But towards the end, boy, he really hit his stride. And I thought that, you know, he really became that sort of speed rusher and speed guy that they kind of needed inside. Did it a little different way. I mean, they're used to having big bodies in there, and you know, that's great. You know, especially when you have Vita Vea and Ndamukong Suh and guys like that. But Vea's power would make teams have to double team him, and very often leave Kancey one on one. And he was the rookie of the month in November. I mean, once he got going, he was really going. And he ended up, I think, with 4 sacks in the regular season, had a couple sacks in the postseason, disruptive, 10 tackles for losses. Like, from a defensive tackle position, with all the games he missed, he had a very, very good year, as did Yaya Diaby, his partner in crime. And those two guys playing together now for the next, you can envision, 8 or 10 years, are going to be they're going to be the guys up front for the Bucs. And they need to bring some guys with them. They need some more. They re-signed, oh, by the way, they re-signed William Golston for another season. 12 years now with the Bucs. It's just an incredible, it really is hard to play 12 seasons in the NFL, much less with one team. But at defensive line, to play 12 seasons is unheard of.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Not so good, as we mentioned at the top of the podcast, were the Rays. And I guess you could throw the lighting in there. Look, the Rays was a mixed bag because they got exactly what you want from Zach Eflin. He was dealing, man. I think he went 6 or 7 innings, somewhere in there. I saw him in the 7th, but he only
in 7th. When I looked up, because I was working the lighting game, but I looked up. He was in 7th inning. He had 71 pitches.
He is so efficient. Yeah, he was 10 pitches an inning. I mean, that just doesn't happen. And he'd given up no runs, in fact, at that point, I don't believe, maybe one. But the Rays were winning 1-0 for most of the game. And then the guy they just can't get out. And a lot of people can't. But man, has he lived on the Rays the last 2 weeks. Mike Trout goes yard again to give them the lead. And then the bullpen came in with their gas can. Holy cow. It's incredible just how bad these guys have been this year. And it's not so much like the back of the bullpen, although, you know, we've seen them struggle at times too. Like, Adam's been very, very good. I think he's been consistent.
Yeah, he got Eflin. So Eflin went, what, 6 1/3?
6 1/3. And then he got the last two outs in that inning.
Well, yeah, Adam did. Double Adam play. Got him out of that because Eflin had put a couple on.
They had 2nd and 3rd, yep. I think, or 1st and 2nd with one out.
But yeah. Then Maton came in.
Oh.
Or Maton.
He's
or whatever.
Been awful this year.
He's got an ERA of 12 right now.
Yeah.
Granted, he gave up 5 earned runs in one inning.
Right.
On Monday night. So.
Right. We gave up 2 more home runs, I want to say. And they, you know, couldn't get guys out. It was brutal. And he's not gotten the job done, to say the very least. So, and the bigger picture here is, you know, obviously they didn't expect this with the bullpen that they raved about and we raved about and everybody thought was a strength of their team. Well, it's not. It's quite the opposite, especially with all the bases on balls that we've documented. The bigger thing is that you're going to almost have to have lights out pitching unless you're lucky enough to ambush Blake Snell with Rene Pinto, right? Like the big guys in their lineup, and when I say big guys, the two main guys, Yandy Diaz, who American League batting champion, and Randy Arozarena, who is your bona fide superstar at this point, in lieu of No Wander Franco. Those guys just aren't, they have not gotten it going. Yeah, they occasionally the last couple of nights, you know, maybe a home run here or RBI there. But for the most part, I don't think this lineup works unless those two guys are productive damn near every night, one or both of them.
Well, not when Josh Lowe's out, not when Brandon Lau's out.
Brandon Lau, you know, yeah. I mean, your lineup's just not deep enough to sustain the leadoff man who did so much for them a year ago and their biggest power hitter really at this point, batting 200 or below. It's just not going to work. And so that's really been the struggle of the early part of the season, I think. They just, when they've had the pitching, they haven't scored a lot of runs, and mostly they just haven't scored a lot of runs. And the bullpen has been bad. So, but they got, you know, it's a 4-game series with the Angels. They, of course, they took them out there in California just a week ago. So they'll get back at it. And they're on this, I think they've won 3 straight series. So they still have plenty of time to turn this one around. But they kind of spoiled a good pitching effort, you know, by exactly what they wanted from their ace in Zach Eflin. They just didn't give any runs. And, you know, even the best pitchers have a tough time winning with just one run. And then there's the Tampa Bay Lightning. And we've talked about this and we'll continue to say it. You know, you hope that the biggest thing is once you've clinched that you don't get anyone hurt. Well, they've had 2 guys now go down. The latest was Glendening. That injury.
That one tonight worries me.
Yeah. He's not coming back.
Tyler Mott went out Thursday last week.
Right.
And he is listed as day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
A hunch is that if this was a playoff game, maybe he could have played tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But the playoffs haven't started. He's a veteran. Just rest him. If he's listed as day-to-day since last Thursday, you anticipate if he doesn't play Wednesday in the finale, you hope he's back for game 1 of the playoffs.
Right.
Which should be either Saturday or Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And we now know the Lightning are either going to face Boston or Florida in the first round.
Yeah.
That's been determined because the Rangers have won the President's Trophy and have the best record.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll face this number 2 wild card.
Mm-hmm.
But Glendening, the way he left the ice tonight, holding his arm, wrist, whatever, the way he went down.
Yeah.
Cooper's already announced that he will not play Wednesday.
Right.
Although that's not surprising. The game means nothing last game of the season. But he also mentioned that the players kind of, after that injury, kind of played like they just wanted to get off the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Which
mm-hmm.
leads you to believe that's maybe more serious. And Glendening is by far their best faceoff guy.
Uh-huh.
Matter of fact, he's one of the tops in the league. And takes most of the key faceoffs. And been tremendous on penalty kill. Like, if you lose Glendening for the playoffs, or the first part of the playoffs, that's not good.
Yeah, you'll feel it on the PK no matter what. But, yeah. Well, and that's the danger. You know, you clinch and guys have to play and they have stuff to play for. I mean, Kucherov is trying to get, 100 assists or something like that?
And they're trying so hard to get him.
Oh, I know.
I mean, too much so. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, he got number 99 on Monday night.
Yeah.
And he was trying to become the 4th player ever to get 100 assists.
It's unbelievable.
Now he'll have to be the 5th because Connor McDavid did get number 100.
Ah, he did. Okay.
Yes. They scored 9 goals. McDavid only had 2 points, a goal and an assist. But
okay.
So McDavid has 100 assists. Kucherov is sitting at 99 now with 1 game to go.
Yeah,
trying to become the fifth player ever to hit 100 assists.
It's unbelievable. I mean, that such an accomplishment, and it won't be easy as you're aware of that number. You know, trying to feed him the whole time. But that's what really Wednesday will be about. The other thing, we talked about this before Monday's game. You know, would Vasilevskiy take Monday off and play Wednesday? Turns out, I think he's going to play both games.
He played Monday night. I would assume he's playing Wednesday. He normally wouldn't want
five to six days off.
I mean, depending on when the playoffs start for the Lightning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm going to guess he's going to play on Wednesday.
And they didn't play great around him. I mean, they got back in the game with a goal, and then, like, what, 15 seconds later, they gave one up.
Mm-hmm.
Bassey got frustrated, broke his stick on the ice, which you don't see very often. It was just bad coverage in front of the net.
There was a lot of bad decision-making, a lot of bad passes, a lot of bad turns. Like, this is the stuff that they were doing a lot early in the season. And what you worry about is...
the habits.
Do you think they can flip a switch? Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
But so many... Yeah, you know, like, are you just developing habits where you can flip a switch and be more intense? I mean, they definitely weren't intense going in.
The intensity will be there, I think, with the postseason.
Correct. But will the decision-making be there? Because it's been poor.
It's been bad.
Four or five games.
Yeah, they've not been structured. They've not made good passes. Even in games where they've had zone time, they haven't scored. But a lot of turnovers, a lot of odd man rushes, shorthanded stuff. Like, just not very buttoned up. And at the very least, even if you lose, you want to be playing the right way, right? You want to have, you know, good passes and not have those turnovers and giveaways and things like that. So I don't know. Like you said, it's a second season. It everybody's 0-0. Everybody has to play the same schedule, yada, yada, yada. But they would probably feel a little bit better about themselves if they won and played a clean game on Wednesday. But again, the biggest thing, as we saw with Glendening, is just get out of it healthy as you can possibly be. You know, don't lose anyone. But you still have to go play the game, and you only have so many players, so those guys got to go play. So it really is kind of a tough line to walk.
But we even see it in the NFL when you get the bye week, and then do you play your guys in week 18?
Oh, the rest versus
if you already have
things
clinched because now it's going to be 2 weeks. Like sports, so much of sports is momentum.
Momentum.
And I don't know, like, if team carries game to game, but, like, personally you do. And it's the routine and the rhythm and, you know, everything's feeling good and that. That's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what, you know, that's why you're not going to sit Vazzy on Wednesday is my guess.
No, I think he's going to play. I was surprised he played Monday, but now that he has played, I think he has to play Wednesday because he's not going to go that many days. And it looks like it'll be Saturday. We don't have the official word yet.
So if they're playing Boston, the Celtics have announced there's a home playoff game Sunday.
Okay.
So if they're playing Boston, looks like Saturday would be the date that the Lightning would start. If they play the Panthers, I suppose it could be Saturday or Sunday be the start for game one. Yeah. They'll be on the road regardless.
Right. Well, it's almost here, and that means more late nights for Steve. But that's okay because we like playoff hockey.
That's what you play for, man. That's what you live for.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a long season, man. It's a long season. It's the hardest trophy to win, hardest championship to win, and it begins this weekend, either Saturday or Sunday. And so we'll be following them as long as they're dropping the puck. Should be interesting. I don't know really what to expect from this team, but there's still a heart of a champion there, and when they dial it up, usually your best players play the best, and that's going to be fun to watch. So look forward to that. We got the draft coming up, obviously. The Lightning game on Wednesday. The Rays continue their series against the Angels tonight. And so lots to talk about all week long, especially heading into the draft. So keep it right here on Sports Day Tampa Bay. Thanks for listening. For Steve Burstick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.